Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me with my introduction for Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. I would like to make this play as enjoyable as possible for all of us, and if this is your first introduction to Shakespeare, I want you to have fun. And I believe that the way to have fun with Shakespeare is to understand it well. Go ahead and open your Dover edition. Take a look at page 3, III, on the table of contents. You'll notice there are 5 acts listed. Every Shakespeare play has 5 acts. Within those acts are a various number of scenes. We'll be taking a look at an introduction to each act, then an introduction to each scene. The best way for you to use this recording is to listen to the complete introduction and scene by scene, listen to the whole thing, or if you choose, you can stop and start the recording repeatedly as you read each scene and read through each act. Taking a look at Act 1, we are in Messina, Italy today. You can imagine that we're out in a lush vineyard, the setting is beautiful, and we are we're on Leonato's property. He is the governor of Messina here in Italy. So he is a wealthy man. He has a beautiful daughter, Hero, who is of marriageable age and ready to be married. And as the scene opens up, we are enjoying the lush countryside of Messina, and a messenger comes. We have Leonato casually relaxing with his daughter and her cousin Beatrice and their friends and various workers. They're enjoying the countryside, and in comes a messenger. Enter Leonato, Hero, and Beatrice with a messenger. And the messenger is going to come in. Leonato will welcome him and give him the utmost respect. And the messenger will respect Leonato because he is the governor. And we will hear that the men are just coming back to return from war. We've had a great number of troops out, and they've been battling. We have the noble Don Pedro, and we have his evil brother, his evil illegitimate brother, Don John. In comes the messenger, and Leonato says, as he looks at the letter, "I learn in this letter that Don Pedro of Aragon comes this night to Messina." The messenger, "He is very near by this. He was not 3 leagues off when I left him." And Leonato, "How many gentlemen have you lost in this action?" And the messenger replies that they have not lost very many. And Leonato expresses a thrill that there have not been, that not very many men have been killed. Then Beatrice interrupts, and Beatrice, who is Hero's sassy cousin, Beatrice asks if there is any news of a man named Benedick. And everyone stops and listens, because when Beatrice speaks, it is very often with very sharp, sarcastic, critical remarks. So people stop to hear what she says, and she her first lines, "I pray you," this is the bottom of page 1, "is Signor Montanto returned from the wars or no?" And the messenger, taken off guard, on the top of page 2, "I know none of that name, lady. There was none such in the army of any sort." And of course, the person she is asking about is Signor Benedick. This is the man that she obviously has interest in, but will not allow anyone to know this, and so she pretends as though she hates him. And the messenger replies, "Well, yes, he's fine. He's as pleasant as he ever was." And Beatrice begins to rail on poor Signor Benedick, and he has not even returned from the war. Beatrice will continually make sarcastic remarks about Benedick, that his friends will be sorry, that he is a stuffed man. She will continually use puns to refer to him. Anytime someone tries to make a kind remark about Benedick, Beatrice will counter that with some type of a sarcastic pun. If they say he's just like a man, she says, oh yes, a man stuffed with all stuffed with virtues, she says, yes, he's no less than a stuffed man. And Leonardo has to tell the messenger, don't worry, they never get together, but that they have this skirmish of wit. And these are those paper bullets of the brain, as we will hear them referred to later. And it's very, very fascinating. Then Beatrice and the messenger continue with their retorts. Leonardo tells the messenger, don't worry about it. You do not have to be concerned. They always fight when they get together like this. And middle of page 3, in come the men from war. Now, in Shakespeare's day, obviously, we only have men on the stage, and we certainly cannot have horses on the stage. So we have to have the men. They would dismount and come in wearing riding gear onto the stage and look as though they just got back from war. Of course, in the Kenneth Branagh version that we can watch, we actually see horses and we see pretty girls wearing very feminine clothes. And in Shakespeare's day, none of this would have been possible. As Don Pedro, the good prince, dismounts and comes to see Leonardo, Don Pedro is very happy to see him. Leonardo meets him and says, oh, you're never any trouble. When you come to my house, Your Grace, I enjoy having you here. You help me to get rid of any sorrow, and I'm always happy when you are here. And Don Pedro is looking to Hero and says, I think this must be your daughter, Leonardo. He has a joke on page 3. Her mother hath many times told me so. Of course, this is a joke. We always have these sharp retorts in Shakespeare. Then we have the meeting of Beatrice and Benedick, and we do see some of the exchanging of the sharp skirmish of wit, the jabs, the paper bullets of the brain. Beatrice and Benedick begin speaking at the bottom of page 3 and speak as though they detest one another and cannot stand to be around one another and can hardly wait to part. And of course, this provides for a good joke with the rest of their company. And Beatrice says, oh my goodness, I could not stand it if someone ever loved me. I'd rather hear my dog bark at a crow than to hear a man say that he loved me. And Benedick tells her, oh, thank goodness, bless the Lord, you feel this way. God keep your ladyship still in that mind. And that way, some poor gentleman will escape a predestined scratched face. Because should she fall in love with someone, Benedick's implication here implies that she would scratch his face. She's so sharp. So they are talking about how much they detest one another. And now we see at the bottom of page 4 that Claudio has come home from the war. When he left for the war, he felt that he had to be a gentleman. He had to be an officer. He had to be a soldier, and he could not think about things of love. Now that he's back from the war, he looks over at Hero, Leonardo's daughter, and thinks, she is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Doesn't she look modest? Doesn't she look honest? Isn't she wonderful? And he comments this in front of Benedick, who looks at her and says, well, I don't see anything like that, but if you do, I suppose that's okay. And Claudio cannot believe that Benedick could ignore her and says, oh my goodness, she's a rare jewel, a rare jewel. Benedick is very much put off to think, oh my goodness, Claudio is falling in love. How could you do that? You have no intent to turn husband, have you? In comes Don Pedro, bottom of page 5. Again, in comes Don Pedro, and looking to see what the two young men have been talking about, Benedick and Claudio, only to find out that Benedick is more than ready to say, oh, you're not going to believe it. He's in love. Can you believe that? Who's he in love with? Oh, my goodness, Leonardo's short daughter. And Don Pedro gives Claudio the blessing and says, that's fine, she's a wonderful girl. And Benedick then will have to rail repeatedly on page 6 about how he will never lose his bachelorship. He will always remain single. And we have a few references on page 6 to things like having horns on your forehead, hanging your bugle on an invisible baldric. There are repeated references in Shakespeare to cuckolding. A cuckolded husband is a husband whose wife has cheated on him. And so the tradition goes, when a husband is cheated on, he begins to grow horns. And that's how you can tell. Don't take your hat off because you're growing horns. It means you have been cuckolded. The Elizabethans thought this was hilarious, to make fun of these inappropriate things in marriage, to make fun of a woman cheating on her husband. Elizabethans thought that that was the good butt of a joke, something good to do. Now we see on page 7 that Claudio now is talking about Hero. He's trying to figure out if he wants to marry Hero or not. He thinks that he does. She looks like a modest, obedient young woman. And he makes a comment at the bottom of page 7, "Hath Leonardo any son, my lord?" He's asking this of the prince, Don Pedro, his friend. They've been out campaigning and as soldiers together. And Don Pedro makes a remark that, no, she has no other siblings. She will be Leonardo's only heir. Apparently, this is important to Claudio. He's going to marry a rich only child. When Leonardo dies, if he marries her, when his father-in-law dies, they would have the wealth of Leonardo, who is the governor of Messina. They would have that. Sometimes readers are offended at Claudio and feel that he is looking at Hero as a trophy type of wife, that he only wants to marry her because she looks perfect, she acts perfect, and because she is rich. We have to give Claudio the benefit of the doubt, but it is true that very often audiences prefer the relationship of Beatrice and Benedict because they are more exciting, they are more challenging, and if their relationship works out at the end of the story, they might have the better marriage because it's based on, somewhat anyway, on mutual attraction. Now, what do our soldiers conspire to do? They are going to be at Leonardo's home for a while. They're celebrating because they've come home from battle. You need to know that this battle campaign was between the forces of Don Pedro, the prince, and his illegitimate brother, the evil Don John. They have been at war against one another. They have come back to Leonardo's estate together. They have ended their small war, and they have appeared to have made up and in an attempt to be friends with one another. What you will see is that Don Pedro, the prince, appears to be rather naive. He believes that he has forgiven his brother, that his brother is upset because, as an illegitimate child, he will never inherit. Should Don Pedro the prince die, his evil brother Don John is not in line to become the prince. It would have to be someone else. Because he is illegitimate, he is barred from ever succeeding and becoming a prince or being a real part of the family. He is a social outcast. So you'll see that Don John is always unhappy. In fact, the only happiness he can claim is when he is trying to make other people unhappy, especially his brother and his brother's good friends, which unfortunately for this story includes young Claudio. Claudio is obviously a favorite of the prince, Don Pedro, excuse me, and therefore Claudio is an enemy of Don John, Don Pedro's evil brother. They're going to have a mask. They're going to have a party. What better way to celebrate coming home from the war? On page 8, we see that they are going to wear masks and go to this party all dressed up. Now Claudio wants to know if he can marry Hero. Apparently he's embarrassed to approach she and her father himself. And so the prince, Don Pedro, at the bottom of page 8 says, "Don't worry, I will assume thy part in some disguise." Don Pedro will dress up as Claudio and see if Hero has any affection for him, then go to her father and say, "May I have the hand of your daughter Hero for my good friend Claudio?" And Claudio believes him, and they agree to do this. Now on page 9, we have scene 2. Act 1, scene 2. And we are at Leonardo's house. In this very short scene, we have the first occasion of misnoting. Remember, this title is Much Ado About Nothing. The word, the Elizabethan word for nothing, was pronounced noting. And so noting and nothing are pronounced the same for Shakespeare. This play is a play of puns. It is a play of misunderstandings, of misnotings, of wrong notings, of misunderstandings. The entire plot of this play is based on things that have not really even happened. Scene 2 here on page 9. Here comes Leonardo and his brother Antonio. They greet one another. How are you? Where's my cousin, your son? And they're talking about music. Antonio says, you wouldn't believe what I have to tell you, brother Leonardo. Leonardo says, well, is it good news? And Antony, his brother, says, well, I saw the prince and Claudia walking, and I overheard them. A man of mine overheard them, and the prince told Claudio that he loved my niece, your daughter. He's referring to Hero. Now, what Antonio has overheard, he overheard the prince telling Claudio that he would pursue Hero for him, for Claudio. Leonardo's brother Antonio misunderstood. His man misunderstood, heard the prince telling Claudio that he would seek Hero's hand for Claudio, and now Leonardo and Antonio believe that it is the prince himself, not Claudio, who is seeking the hand of Hero. So, Leonardo is amazed. He thinks, oh my goodness, the prince wants to marry my daughter. Well, thank you for telling me. That is our first misunderstanding. Page 10 in the Dover edition, now we are in Act 1, Scene 3. We are in the same place, we're still at Leonardo's home, and in come the evil Don John and one of his henchmen, Conrad. Now, Conrad comes in, he looks at Don John. Don John is always pouting and always unhappy. So Conrad says, my lord, why are you thus out of measure sad? And we have the evil Don John's reply, his famous reply, there is no measure in the occasion that breeds. Therefore the sadness is without limit. And Conrad says you should listen to reason. Don John is still pouting. The entire page here on page 10, that first part of scene 3, Don John is pouting and telling us that he is not happy. No matter what happens, he is not happy. He would rather be a canker in a hedge than a rose in his brother's grace. He would rather be a thorn than a rose. And Conrad, top of page 11, says, can you make no use of your discontent? Can't you take your unhappiness and do something with it? And Don John replies, top of page 11, I make all use of it, for I use it only. Who comes here? And in comes Baroccio. Now Baroccio comes in, and he has heard intelligence of an intended marriage. He has overheard something. Don John's only concern, middle of page 11, will it serve for any model to build mischief on? Whatever this intelligence is that Baroccio has gathered, can he use it to build mischief? And Baroccio replies, Mary, it is your brother's right hand. Don John replies, who? The most exquisite Claudio? Remember I mentioned, who does Don John is the illegitimate brother of Don Pedro the Prince, who does he detest? His brother. He detests the happiness of his brother and any friends of his brother, including his brother Don Pedro's right-hand man, Claudio. This news is about Claudio. Don John is thrilled because now he has something that he can create a plot and try to ruin someone. If he cannot ruin his brother, he will ruin his brother's right-hand man, Claudio. So, who is it? Which way does he look? He looks at Hero, the daughter and heir of Leonardo. And Don John asks how he came across this, and Baroccio gives the occasion for that. Moving on now in our Dover edition, page 13, we are now in Act 2. We finish Act 1. There will be 5 acts in this play. We are now at Act 2. Scene 1. We are in Leonardo's house. In comes Leonardo, Antonio, Hero, Beatrice, and many others. Leonardo comments to Antonio that, "I didn't see the evil Don John here at supper. Was he here?" Antonio, Leonardo's brother, says, "No, I didn't see him ever." Beatrice makes a remark, "How tartly that gentleman looks. I never can see him, but I am heartburned an hour after." Beatrice has remarked, Beatrice notices here that Don John never looks happy to her. They discuss his character. He has a melancholy disposition, and he does seem to be always unhappy. They discuss Benedick and try to put together if they had half of Benedick's tongue, half of his sharp tongue, in Count John's mouth, the two of them together might make a good husband. We continue on, and Leonardo begins making remarks to Beatrice to the sort of the kind that he hopes that he can one day see her fitted with a husband. I'm on page 14 in the Dover, and Beatrice replies, "Not till God make men of some other metal than earth," because Adam was made from the dust of the earth, and she's making a reference here. She says, "Would it not grieve a woman to be overmastered with a piece of valiant dust, to make an account of her life to a clod of wayward marl? No, uncle, I'll none. Adam's sons are my brothers, and truly, I hold it a sin to match in my kindred." So, if all mankind are her brothers as they're related through Adam, she says, "I could never marry a brother? That's wrong." So Beatrice takes everything one step farther here. Then she makes some interesting references. There are allusions here to some different dances. At the bottom of page 14 and top of page 15, we have the French syncopace, or a galliard. This is a very fast dance, and in comparison with marriage, as you see the text there, the wooing part of a marriage, the part where the young man woos, pursues, tries to win the heart of the young woman, this is compared by Beatrice to a syncopace. It's very fast. The hearts are beating very quickly. The young man is hoping for a positive answer from the young woman and from her father. It's a very fast. It's very exciting. It's very fast. Then the next part of the marriage is compared with what? A Scotch jig. A Scotch jig. Full and fantastical compared with a syncopace. Then the wedding itself is more mannerly, it is modest, like a measure. It is something that is stately and traditional. So the marriage part of the courtship is the part where everything is well planned, everything goes off as it was intended. Then the third comparison of marriage is after the marriage. This part of the relationship is compared with a syncopace.